Welcome to Deep Dive Wine Acoustics, Episode 5, Albibarolo, or so I think. It's Andy Tarnoff, the host of the Deep Dive Podcast Network, and once again I'm joined by Courtney Taylor-Taylor from the Dandy Warhols, and we're getting ready to drink some wine, Courtney.
You remember we did the BV as the first one.
Yeah,
first episode. And that was at the $35 range. This is up there at the $30-$35. Chuck Barolo, the king of Italian wines. They are very strict about their policies in what gets to be called a Barolo. You can't be growing grapes on the valley floor. You can't have north-facing exposure. There's a number. They're really strict. And so this is the same thing that we had last episode, the Nebbiolo. It's Nebbiolo grape. But with this, they have all these other strictures that they must adhere to. And that is why you earn the reputation of Barolo. And that's why you charge $35 at the very low end.
Did you know that stuff off the top of your head, or did you have to research what you just told me?
I spent a lot of time. Interestingly enough, my first friend in Barolo, well, he lives 20 minutes away in Marene, which is another little village, but it's not a wine village. He was the postman. That was what his public service was postman, from 18 to 20 years old for the Barolo Barbaresco Alba region.
Okay.
And so when we would go there, we would get to, well, if we go there again ever, we will when we go there, we'll be taken around to people that he delivered mail to for, a couple of years at least. And so he knows all the winemakers and all the old people that own the wineries and the families and all that. So Barolo and Barbaresco are very special places to me because I've been there a lot. So I know a lot of, goofy information about this region.
I think we should, since we've discovered that wine changes, well, you knew this already, but I've discovered that throughout the course of this episode, the wine either changes or doesn't change. And I'm hoping this one develops and matures. So I think we should crack this bad boy open and then keep the conversation going and talk about all the other stuff too.
Okay, great. And I'm going to show you guys, I sing the praises of the Somme key, and you told me that Molly made you get a Somme key. So this, again, Somme key. This is good Somme key. It's got a little knuckle right there, right? So you can use, when you screw down all the way into the bottle, spoiler alert. Let me get the spoiler out. Spoiler alert. So
you're gonna take
the jagged edge, and we're gonna take that top of that foil right off of there, and then some.
I'm kind of nervous about this. I don't know if this is
your new tool.
Yeah.
And then think of it as a new toy, actually.
All right.
Okay, so then you want to get this kind of screw. It doesn't go in the center by itself. So you I always like to put it a little off center so that the center is the center of the helix.
Okay.
And then you screw it down in there, and I would just go all the way at first or close. Then, as you can see, you've got a little notch here to use first, because obviously when you're down that far, you can't. You see, you, Andy.
Yeah, I'm listening.
You can't
wait. I should focus on screwing it all the way in, though, first, right?
Well, really, just get it in there.
Okay.
And then, do you see that you can't use the end notch?
Yeah.
Because you're too far down into the. Okay, so then what you do is you try to push it in and find that other little ledge, it's got a knuckle, a hinge there, and that'll get you started, and then you can pull it out that far, then unscrew it until the end notch goes in there. I just got it, found it, and then you can use it the rest of the way.
I got a bang.
That makes sense
in theory. It's gonna be
Well,
sensitive.
it's probably more important that it makes sense to people watching.
Right. I'm gonna.
You can practice on your own. So
So I'm
next time
using
you'll be
the
like
top notch
pro
goes on
style.
the higher notch goes on the top of the
Against
bottle
the
or through?
bottle, yeah, goes on the end of the bottle, right there on the
Okay.
edge of the
Okay.
bottle, the lip.
Okay.
And use that as your first lever to lever it out a
That clutch?
centimeter or two.
Okay. Okay.
Okay, yeah, get it as far out as you can on the little guy, the short end of the
Okay.
lever.
Okay.
Okay, now
Okay.
try pressing the handle till it's vertical again, and then
Okay.
see how far the lever will go in. Can you get the lever end to reach the lip of the bottle?
Oh, I just, this makes sense. Except I corked it. Fuck.
Ooh,
It totally made
okay,
sense, but that's all right.
that's
I got it back
tricky.
up.
I thought this cork would be young enough, but the Italians tend to make fairly
Shit.
long corks often. Okay, stick it
I
back
got
in
this.
there.
Can I just use
Stick it
this
back.
now? This,
Hold on. How much cork is left in there?
not a whole lot, about a third of it.
Okay, use this one again because this doesn't press straight down. This you can hook in there at an angle
Okay.
and get it started. Then all you have to do, well, I can't believe we're having full first aid class here.
I'm
This
humiliated right
is
now.
very serious. No, that happens all the time. It's not a big deal.
You've
You're
corked a
getting it down
bottle
in
in
there?
your, yeah, I'm getting there. You've corked a bottle in your day?
Oh, geez. Of course, everybody has. Okay, so once you get it as far in as you can, screw it all the way down till it's resting, the handle is resting across the top of the bottle, right? Now use your hand between your ring finger and your middle finger, put the mouth of the bottle, the neck of the bottle, and pull the handle straight, stand up and pull that handle straight up and out just as evenly as you possibly can. Hold the.
You saved it.
Whoo! You want to know about a happy about this? We get to pour it now and drink it. How cool is that? Oh my
I'm
gosh.
ready. That just stressed me on live
I
podcast.
know. Okay, here it comes.
No
And
cork.
again, try to pour it up to the widest point of the glass just so you can get your fat mitt around it and really
Okay.
warm up a good amount of it at one time. Like that. And time to
Stressful.
talk about the nose. Time to talk about your nose, Andy.
Ample.
Ooh, that smells like quality wine.
I immediately smelled licorice. Do you smell anise in this?
Wow, good. You're an anise.
You're an anise. You're anise.
Oh, definitely, definitely. That's a
The
good
first thing I
call.
just smelled. Well, okay. You'd think I know this by the fifth episode, but how long are we going to smell this before we drink this?
I don't know. What do you, how long do you want to?
Well, I was wondering if we should bring up the cheese that we purchased to go along with this, or if we
Yeah,
should just
which
start
one did we
drinking
get?
it.
Rioblò or something? It's a Piemontese cheese, and this is
Right.
from the region. Again, I'll repeat myself from last episode, but this region is known as Piedmont, or spelled Piedmont, from when Napoleon had conquered it, lost it back to the main country of Italy at some
Right.
point. But it still remains known as Piedmont the world over. When I'm there, my buddy who lives there, he calls it La Langa, the
Love
land,
that. That's
which
so
always,
cool.
I know, it's
Yeah.
just so romantic, sends me. Okay, so we've got this amazing cheese that is more like a brie,
Yeah.
less like a Teutonic rubbery cheese,
Right.
and it's creamy. It's not very flavorful, and I think being from the same place, it probably has had countless billions of gallons of Barolo consumed while this cheese was being et. All right.
Fantastic. Let's do it. I think Courtney is saying something about the cracker he's eating, but I'm not sure. We have the same crackers. Mm. This is a very high-tech operation. Matching all the way.
Same size glass.
Same size glass.
Same wine, same cracker.
Equally
same
sober for now.
Let's for a bit.
For now.
Man, that's a solid Barolo smell.
Mm. Whoa.
Cool. That isn't nearly as tannic. So I guess I can see why it's on the lower end of the price spectrum. Maybe they're just not oaking it to last, to try to get it to last for 50 years, you know?
I or even 30. Again. Immediately.
God, this is a good wine. This is a significantly better wine than the Nebbiolo was.
Which I liked, but...
Yes, but the high didn't exist. Don't forget, also, right. We were talking about that That's after true. The episode, that
yep.
that
yep.
the high never really came on. It was just a good tasting and good smelling wine. Maybe it had no alcohol in it. Maybe, we didn't even look. It could be zero proof.
Mm.
Or whatever they call
it
now.
I've watched the rough edit, and I can tell you that either it was a psychosomatic thing, or it definitely had alcohol in it.
Pretty sure. I've got the bottle right here. I could probably look at it and let you know. What was that?
That's the one that looked like Joel Guion on it.
Yes.
Of which I made a little Photoshop illustration with his mutton chops, which you did not find funny, but I did because I had already had a bottle of it.
I enjoyed it. I'm glad you did that. I enjoyed the heck out of it. You should probably show everyone.
Yeah, check this out, people.
Okay. See, I do like it. I love it.
Thank you.
I didn't laugh out loud.
You laughed to yourself?
Yeah, I didn't or anything.
I don't know. All right. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we got our cheese, we got our wine. I upped the game here because I did a little research on this wine and said it goes well with cured meats and truffle. And then, of course, I found salami with black truffle oil.
Okay, I have little salami sticks upstairs. Maybe I better go run and get one.
Do you want to?
Ready? Cut.
I just dove into the salami while you were finding your own salami. Okay, now you got your own
salami. Salami is far more interesting than a cheese and cracker combination is pretty darn interesting, I must say. But, okay. Salami, I'm a little out of breath. I just had three flights of stairs to go.
Take your time.
I had to go get a different pot stick because that one I had smoked much earlier in the day. You can't really get stoned off the same pot twice in a day, I find. You have to nap or something.
You're in Portland where the whole city smells like weed. Do you think that mixing pot and wine, do they go well together or not so well?
Oh, I think it's amazing. But you can't get drunk and then smoke pot, or you'll throw up. We call it Dimension X.
That's good.
You ever tried it?
Unfortunately, I have.
Okay, so this, generally salamis have vinegar in them, right? That's what gives it this lovely tangy flavor.
Yeah.
So that might be a problem over there on your end, because I just tried it, and I'm going back to the cheese and cracker.
Okay.
Tangy and red wine aren't good friends. Well, they're actually they're rude neighbors.
That's funny. Let me give you the winemaker notes on this one, and then we can discuss. So it shows an expressive nose with aromas of fresh cherries, crushed stones, and roses. Stone roses?
Nothing about licorice.
Not yet. The mouthfeel is bright and energetic with generous mouthfeel and a youthful tannic structure enriched by notes of raspberry and orange zest. Long textural finish.
You getting any of that?
I'm
pouring more.
There's a flavor in there that I don't like.
It's going to re-up the nose game. Oh, really? Are you sure it's not just because of the sausage? The salami.
It might be, but there's some sort of aftertaste that's peculiar to me. That's why I keep thinking anise or anus.
That's why you keep thinking it's $35 instead of $60, which is Barolo usually costs.
Something skanky tasting about this. But
damn it.
Maybe it's because of the black truffle oil. I don't know. But that's what it said.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Let's see.
Okay, I'm going back in.
Do you taste any licorice, or is that all on me? It's almost bitter.
There's definitely a bitter note. I think the bitterness is probably what I always imagine it is, you know, they burn the inside of the oak of the barrels, and that's called the toast. And you can do light toast or medium toast or dark toast. And then how long you let it sit in that barrel also is going to affect the bitterness, which obviously we know this from charring the outside char on meats, is that, you know, the monkey likes charred, you know, or the caveman in us or whatever the heck it is.
Welcome to the monkey house.
Whatever it is, we like charred. I guess we have been roasting, you know, wild game over spits for tens of thousands of years or something. So given that,
since they invented fire, probably, yeah.
I think invented it.
Maybe I should not eat any more of this delicious salami because I think the truffle oil is causing it.
Have that with a nice glass of milk.
Yeah, this also does not go well with
a nice warm glass. Have that with a nice hot mug of beef broth. Okay, so.
Let me tell you about what some of your favorite and least favorite wine experts have to say about this.
Dying to know.
And then you can tell me if you agree. So first of all, let's talk about Robert Parker. Remember that guy?
The biggest king.
Okay. Robert Parker says, you can't beat this value. The G.D. Vihara. Every time I hear GD, I just think it's going to be called the goddamn Vihara. Sorry.
Maybe it is.
The GD Vihara 2020.
I think I know somebody who is going to call it that from now on.
It may be me, but we'll see. The 2020 Barolo Alba is buttoned up with fresh primary fruit, and the wine does not have that hint of overripeness that is found across this vintage. The fruit is dark and savory, and there's a big mineral component to match. But the bouquet is nicely redolent.
Ooh, I don't even know what the word
redolent
you.
Means. It's nicely redolent of dark currant, plum, granite, and a raspy dry note that brings crushed shale to mind. The tannins are quite impactful, and they give this wine extra runway for moderate bottle aging. I don't know, Bob Parker.
Wow. What a performance by both of you. That was special.
I was just reading it, but okay. It's redolent of dark currant, whatever redolent means. Of dark currant, plum, granite, and a raspy dry note. Crushed shale. I guess the crushed shale, maybe. I haven't eaten any crushed shale before, but if I were to, I would.
I don't think I've even like smelt this. It.
It's like what you find out at like a train tracks. How the hell does he know what crushed
shale
tastes
there
like?
there is a smell of tarred, you know, cross ties, railroad ties. There's this, and they put it in there, and I don't know why. For some reason, there was a certain era, maybe the mid-2000s, where I was running across a lot of Bordeaux that had just blatant, like, tarmac, you know, like a tar.
I get that a little
bit. And sulfur as well, a little bit. That's a different thing. They actually put sulfur in wines.
Add it?
They just add blatant sulfur in there. And it tastes like sulfur. It smells like sulfur. I don't get it. But they say it helps it age longer. So perhaps I've been drinking, hugely sulfured wines, but just not knowing it because it was like I like 20-year-old wine.
I don't taste sulfur, but I guess I kind of maybe taste tarmac. I don't know if I don't
Well,
know, Courtney.
I okay.
All right.
I want to love these wines. Maybe you've just turned into a snob in 5 weeks of.
Well, it's very possible. So, Robert Parker, you want to
Wow.
guess
Wow.
what
Can
you
we
want to
just
guess
have you
what
at an
Bobby?
Ascot moment there? You with an
Yes.
Ascot and going, no, it's no good.
Mm,
Baptist.
notes of tarmac and sulfur and
Home
anise.
electronics.
I taste burnt cables. Robert Parker gives this a 94. A 90 fucking four.
Wow. Wow.
Come on, man.
Okay.
That's like as high as it goes for a $35 bottle of, right? That's.
Look at you.
I'm
Yes,
learning. I'm learning,
absolutely.
dude.
I know. You're absorbing
Thank
information
you.
like an infant.
Like baby Rain
Astronomical.
Man right now. Do I hear what Jimmy Suckling has to say, our good friend James Suckling?
I love him.
Jimmy Suckling says this is a bright and lively Barolo showing sliced oranges, raspberries, crushed stones, and rose petals on the nose. Medium
Okay,
bodied.
hold on. Except for
Okay.
crushed stones, have I said before? Have I mentioned that they completely have different ideas of what what they're experiencing?
Yeah,
They contradict
maybe.
each other freely.
So, yeah, okay, crushed stones, rose petals. He says medium bodied with sharp acidity and tight tannins, lots of energy. Try from 2027. Well, I can't go in the
Oh,
future.
he doesn't believe that this is a drink it now wine. All right.
Maybe he.
What year is it? What year are we drinking
So
again?
2020. So James Suckling is telling us to time travel to 2027 and give it a shot. Nonetheless, he rated this one a 93.
Even nonetheless, okay. So it is a good quality wine, and they both know it, and they know more about young wines than I do. I immediately went for old wines, and but
Oh.
I obviously, when you taste hundreds of bottles in a year, you're going to taste a lot of everything. But
Gets
yeah,
better
that's
in
good.
terms of
That's
time
good.
traveling. You're ready to time travel
Yeah.
farther into the future from Jeb Dunnick, who's another one of your guys.
Yep,
You like
I
Jeb.
like Jeb.
A ripe ruby hue. Yes, I agree. The
Wow,
2020
never heard that said
Barolo.
about Barolo. They're always bricky, brown and bricky.
I think it's ruby. I think it's full on ruby
Yeah,
slippers.
I just looked at it in the grim autumn
In the
daylight
dungeon?
in or
Yeah.
Portland, Oregon.
Every time you get into that gravelly old man
Oh
voice,
yes, what? Job.
yeah.
We're doing a job. We're two men doing a job. Hey,
I
what?
picture Winston Churchill or something, but so he calls it a ripe ruby hue. The 2020 Barolo Albe offers a beautiful bouquet of raspberries, fresh flowers, and delicate spice. Medium bodied. It has a lot of elegance with ripe and supple tannins and a bit of iron-rich earth. Drink from 2024 to 2037. I don't
Okay, we're
know.
in Jeb Dunnick's window of opportunity
Is
right
Jeb,
now,
are
dude.
any of us still going to be alive in 2037? That's a long time from now.
That's
Okay,
a
given the state of the universe, is he
very
still alive?
good, very good, and super depressing question that is very hard to get away from in the world today. So let's not talk about it like everybody else.
Okay, well, I'm not speaking like
Thanks,
politically. I'm
man.
just saying that's 12 years from now, 13 years from now, and I don't.
There is no way to write it. Can we move on?
Yeah, Jeb gave this a 93.
Oh, these guys are all right in there, huh? Yeah, this is a, yeah, I find it to be an impressive wine. If I went to a dinner party and they were, you know, doing whatever Piedmontese food or something. Actually, dude, if they were having pizza, I would be like, oh, this is a good wine. Damn.
Okay.
I would recognize that it was Barbaresco or Barolo, but there you could, as I like to say, you could probably shoot a 30-06 from one hill to the other.
What?
These two, Barolo and Barbaresco. Yeah, that is a growing up.
Is that like a World War I gun reference you just made? Hunting reference? I don't know what you explain, please.
It's a 70s. If you grew up in the Pacific Northwest, you probably went to John Day and, you know, you went hunting. Okay. And so you knew what a 30-06 was, but
I know that.
But that is how I heard David Bowie for the first time, because they left they would leave us back at the cousin's house, and then they would go and get, you know, whatever, elk, deer, whatever they're doing. And so I never had to see anything actually murdered, which is cool.
Good.
Because we were allowed, we Wisconsin. Were kids. Yeah, we were, you don't take kids tracking and hunting wild game, apparently. So you put them in front of a vinyl record player with the speakers over here with the wood paneling on them, and you prop up Ziggy Stardust, which didn't look like a very exciting cover to me at the time, not like Kiss or something.
Right.
But yeah, that was a imprinting moment for me.
It's a far better story, in my opinion, than how children in Wisconsin grow up during hunting season. Not me. They're doing the shooting at a very young age. I think putting your kid in front of David Bowie is a better move. But again, trying not to get too
David Bowie. About it. David Bowie. He's better than hunting. He was better than hunting.
That's on his tombstone.
Yeah.
All right. I'm still hung up on this anise taste because, all right, I can say that it's the salami, but I also noticed it when we opened it up and I smelled it. I know taste and smell are very closely related, but if that black truffle oil was on my palate, it should not have affected what I smelled. Right?
Well, isn't taste like 75% smell, right? I mean, that I don't know if you ever, I don't know where, you know, what that, whose mouth that came out of, you know,
Anton
20 years ago, but Anton told me that it's like 75% smell. No, probably in psychology class, you know, in college.
All right. Well,
and health, maybe health, maybe health in high school.
Maybe health. Do you think it's changing at all?
I think it is. Okay. What do you think about the high here? Are you feeling it's focus? Is it focusing you in some weird way? Can that be depressing?
No, I feel focused. You?
Yeah, but is that bad? Like,
not at first. I think you'd like, it's kind of like you want to get focused first and then you want to get unfocused.
Maybe
like it's bracing. Do you know that term?
Bracing acidity is a huge term in wine, but yes, bracing.
Oh, so bracing is like, you know, I gotta have
bracing.
I gotta have a drink to get myself ready for this conversation. Is bracing?
Mm-hmm. Or maybe. Bracing. When they talk about bracing acidity, what do they mean? They mean like brace yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Hunker down.
It's gonna hit you. It's a sitting.
This is clearing my head, and I'm tasting a little less of the licorice. But if I'm the only person who thinks it's licorice,
I'm thinking it's still too tangy, and I think they're flattering it with that secret word raspberry, which might be a secret insider. Code word for like whatever I give this. Do not buy this wine. It's crap.
Did you say that?
And I just I'm taking. I'm just getting paid to give it a 94.
Yeah. but told now me the raspberry was Kroger for cheap, right?
Well, that's
what you tell me. Strawberry.
That's no, raspberry. And maybe it is. I don't know. But I don't. I'm not loving this wine right now. It got real bouncy and twangy and, you know, twangy. But
I lost your screen. Did something happen on your phone?
Yeah. I'm on low power mode.
Okay.
Please sorry. That's not the issue. It's telling me that it's not charging. I'm plugged in, but it's not charging.
Great. Every episode I force you, maybe against your will, to talk a little bit about music because this is called Wine Acoustics. And I think that you bring something to the table, not just as a wine guy, but obviously as a very accomplished musician. So we have to find that Venn diagram of the two things. And this is pretty fun for me because it's forcing me to listen to a lot of Dandy Warhols, which is, you know, something I do anyway, but I'm paying more attention now that I,
you know, yeah, good.
Academically talking about the music.
I think we're the best. We're at our best at close scrutiny. It might be our
right. So I've been trying, you know, and the thing is, I don't want to only talk about old songs, and I don't only want to talk about new songs, and I don't only want to talk about popular songs and less popular songs. But you said something to me when we were talking about the theme music for these episodes, and it kind of stuck with me. You said that you don't have any like backup material that's not good enough to put on a record, because if it's not good enough to put on a record, you throw it away.
No. If it's not good enough to go on a record, we keep working on it until it is.
That's a better way of putting it. So you don't have like a library of just stuff fart around with.
No, I'm not. I'm not very.
You're not wasting your songs.
I'm not prolific.
But yet, you guys have put out 30 years worth of material.
But every 4 years or something like that, you know. I mean, we're a long time in between because I've never really been a songwriter, so it takes longer for me to be struck with something or just be in such an uncomfortable situation emotionally in my life for long enough, you know, contiguously, that I need to find something outside my cell wall that resonates exactly. And then, you know, the minute the words come out and everything is pretty easy. But this is definitely holding me up. And you,
that's the song that I want to talk about. And
I know,
this
I know. Yeah,
holding
yeah.
me up too. Holding Me Up is a song from the 2005 album Auditorium or Warlords of Mars. That's a hard one to say. And to me, the reason I picked this song to talk about is because I knew it, but my reflection of this song is the live version. But it did. I don't have perfect pitch, so maybe that is in the wrong key. But it is a 7-minute, 16-second studio song, which is a little long for you guys. But the live version is quite a bit longer. When you guys play that live, that you break it down into this jam that just keeps on going. It's like kind of like a hallmark of a Dandy Warhol show.
Yeah, I guess it would. I guess it just depends on if we're getting off on it, you know.
So when you're playing a song live, you as you're feeling it, like you're dictating how long this goes. You guys don't have that like pre-decided before, like we're gonna play this for 10 billion bars and measures, and like, you know, we're gonna stop it at 20 minutes, or like are you like, this is working, let's keep going, or this isn't working, let's go.
Yeah, it's definitely if it's working. I mean, you just at some point you feel yourself not being pulled along by it anymore. You're now pushing the rope.
Can't push a rope. You can't push
and
a rope.
So, well, a lot of us have tried. And if you catch yourself early, you can get out of it without everyone noticing that you're pushing rope.
This is a conversation about music. Or is it?
Of course it is. This is very important. So, it might be the most important conversation about music, pushing rope. Getting caught pushing rope.
Or the song by Ween, Piss Up a Rope. Do you know that song?
No.
It's pretty good. It's
I do love Ween. Cover.
They did this country album, and they got like legit Nashville musicians to make, you know, Gene Ween makes this like serious country album, but it's Ween. So one of their songs is called Piss Up a Rope.
Yep. Oh, so it's not a cover. He actually wrote it.
Yeah. It's a great song. I mean,
okay.
So I had a couple of specific questions about this song, because in an earlier episode, we talked about harmonies, and there are a lot of them in this song. I'm assuming that's you and Fathead, or is that you double tracking?
Harmonies? No, all of the above. You know, we double track, we triple track, we do whatever the hell. Brent lays down a ton of you know, double and triple tracked harmonies and stuff like that. So that's a huge part of the record sounding like they do is balancing those out. And when do you want three, you know, where it's like Queen, just, you know, four layers of notes, or whether you just want one in there, like kind of 70s glammy, punky, or just whatever, I guess, whatever really gets the hair standing up on the back of your neck. Then you decide whether then you go, it's like 1972, whatever, right. Boogie Woogie Glam. Or you go,
do you like this song as much as I do? 77. How do you feel about
it? I can't believe
song?
It.
I know you like all of your songs. But...
I can't believe it. Yeah, I love it. I absolutely love it. It's quintessential, you know, just the cycle of chords. It's the M.C. Escher painting where it's an eternal descending staircase. Yeah, in a square. You know, I said that to when, here's another story of the first time Liam Gallagher was ever nice to me. He said, "Oh, might."
That's a huge accomplishment right there, by the way.
Oh, I know. And anyway, mate, so believe me, like you. Fucking right, mate. Fucking right. And I was like, yeah, it's cool, huh? Yeah, it's like that M.C. Escher ink with the descending staircase. And he goes, and he looks at me while I'm saying this. And he goes, yeah, I'm just saying it's a great fucking song, mate.
That sounds about right. That's pretty on brand.
I liked it. I thought he nailed it.
Do you think that Oasis reunion is really happening, by the way?
Yeah, you know, I've talked to my bookie, and we've decided.
They got some money on this?
We 20 minutes into the fourth concert. Oh shit! Or did we say third? I can't remember. Anyway, no, that's we.
You think I'm gonna make it four shows? Three shows?
We love this. We love this game.
I would put money on that. I will take the under on that. I don't think they're going to make it four shows in, but I hope
they're not going to make it. What do you think? They'll make one? Do you think they'll finish one? They'll finish
one and a half. Back to this song, you could have what I think to be two controversial elements that you pull off. One of them is the hand clapping. Tough to pull that off.
Is it? I don't know. I. It seems to me like every band that tries it only tries it because they can do it. It's not a go-to. Maybe it was in the 80s revival of like 2012, right?
If someone said, hey, Courtney, how do you feel about hand clapping? You'd be like, it's stupid. But no.
No, it's T-Rex. That's interesting that you're not really a glam rock guy, huh?
No, I love glam rock. Absolutely. But I'm just like, I feel like if I said to you, how do you feel about the hand clap? Am I wrong? You're pro hand clap?
You're completely wrong. Yeah. Okay. No. Are you kidding? Okay. God, we've always had them. I don't think there's a record we have never made. There's no way we've made a record without. I mean, we probably try not to have hand claps. Like, okay, can we just have a song without hand claps again? It's just been a while. You know, like we're hand claps, dude. It's like it really strikes a deep thing. Unfortunately, if you compress and EQ it correctly in the mix, otherwise it could be. No, I don't think you can get them wrong, frankly.
Okay. Well, then
I love digital fake hand. I love it all.
Because they're fake, right? You guys aren't really. That's not really happening. That's like a digital hand clap, right?
Yeah, it's a sample from the '80s.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny when you start really doing it, you know, because you never think about it. And then all of a sudden you're like, got this band and it's 94 and you're listening to a lot of T-Rex and the Velvet Underground and stuff. And you're partying that way. And God, those were good times. Mazzy Star and, Jesus and Mary Chain.
Mary Chain just played in Milwaukee, and I missed that show, and I'm super mad about it.
Wow. I wonder if I'd even have any way of knowing they were.
I just so totally missed it.
Oh, no, Pete would tell me. Damn it. But anyway, that era was. We just hand claps. I don't know.
Okay.
I'm feeling blissed out now.
Good.
The wine has stopped being energetic for me.
All right, I'm just gonna keep you on track here because
this wine has gotten me where I like to go.
Okay.
It has.
I'm gonna force you.
I haven't been keeping my fat hot mitt around it though. I have not. I've been.
Is that blood temperature for you?
Dang it! Yeah, no, that's really disappointing.
Paying attention, man.
I am really disappointed in myself.
That's okay. I will guide you. I will Sherpa you through this. Right. My other question about this song was harmonica, which is I may have a controversial opinion on this, but I generally think that harmonica is a bad thing, but you pull it off in this song.
This is very interesting to learn this about you. So Bob Dylan?
No, I love Bob Dylan, but I think rarely do people pull off harmonica and you bust that thing out. Occasionally, and you make it work. And in this song, you specifically make it work. What's your take on harmonica? Is it like a magic trick where it's like, look at me playing harmonica? Or do you think I guess you wouldn't be doing it if you didn't think it was good. But
give it a try. Listen to Hip Shake, the Rolling Stones Hip Shake. Yeah. I think that's the one that makes everyone, obviously Bob Dylan. No, it's just an awesome instrument. It's always been an amazing sounding instrument. Right. No, I love it. I love it. That's okay. Keep going. What else? You know what the range of a tenor sax is?
I do because it's
about 50 yards if you really really wind up. Okay, so that's the only
saxophone
that
humor. What's this time? Band camp. That's good. No, I hope I'm not making you feel uncomfortable here as I pick at your songs, but I think that's kind of the point here. Obviously, I love the Dandy Warhols and
I don't think you're picking up the songs. I mean, in a negative way at all. Okay. So I want to show you this. Okay. So it's folk chords because they're my favorite. And then I leave I just play the same chords, but I leave the skinny E string. Just dongling away, which if I was truly clever, I would have done something cool like removed like all the low strings on a 12 string guitar, electric,
like a totally different
body.
Sound. Yeah. So EGDA, that's it.
Yep.
I don't get how you make so many songs out of these chords. So where did the
boy, I don't remember. I think we had our Greek trumpet player, Achilles.
No way.
Anastasopoulos. Yeah, we were in Greece and we had a week vacation between American tour and European tour starting in Greece. So I just said, let's go to a Greek island for the entire week. Let's find it far away from tourists and just get, cheap bungalows, 25 bucks a night with a few beds in each. No windows, just gauze in front of the, no glass, I mean.
Right. Right.
And, you know, like 20 yards, 100 yards from the beach. And it was absolutely effing amazing. Where was I going with that?
I was just asking about the dude.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Stop. Okay. Okay.
I'm hiring my own voice.
Sorry. Cut. And cut. Yes. So we had him. So Achilles, anastasopolis. And we actually made t-shirts of his name, because if you make it so Achilles Achilleus is this big, the last name will go around to the back. So we had t-shirts made where it went all the way around to the back.
Is that available for purchase at thedandywarhols.com?
It's not, but somebody's got to do it now.
That somebody will be me.
I think it was like our light guy, Lampy, or our guitar tech, probably Poopy, or our guitar tech, Oi Beer. And one of them, but we have had the same crew for so long, and we're just, you know, we all became kind of really tight during the days where we were young and just only stayed on tour all the time.
Do you remember the or do you have no recollection of how this happened? That's what I'm asking you, dude. Because when you hear the song live, it becomes like a sing-along. You can say you don't remember, and I will accept it.
I already did.
All right. I busted out my Casio SK1 from 1984. It's the only thing I have that's in tune and small enough to fit. So you said,
hey, can you play E? Oh, my gosh, we're in tune.
Yeah,
we're in tune. Universal tuning. Rules and regulations used to start out with good ideas, like universal tuning. We are so far away from each other. If you had to ride a horse or take a wagon train, anyway.
No, that's a fascinating concept. I mean, like, are you serious? Like, here we are 3,000 miles away from each other, being able to play live together. God, technology is amazing, Courtney. Oh, shit. Courtney, I can't believe this just happened. This is the first in our podcast. Your battery died, and now we're back a couple hours later. So we were talking about technology.
I'm high tech, and I am professional.
Well, I thought I was professional also, but I just realized something now that the taste of the salami is out of my mouth. That black truffle oil, which said it was supposed to pair with this wine, completely changed the taste of this thing. And now I don't taste anise anymore. What the hell?
Let me back up to the great truffle tasting of earth. It is always in Piedmont. It is exclusively black truffle, I'm told. I don't know. But I'm told that by white truffle growers in Oregon, where I'm from, the other, according to them, greatest truffle producing region on earth. So I don't think it was that. I think it's just the nature of the salami, I would
okay.
guess.
Okay, that could be it. But whatever it was, now that some time has passed, thank you, technical difficulties, I don't taste that like strong black licorice flavor anymore. And I guess my question for you is, have you ever had food that just ruined your wine experience? Because I think this wine's fine.
Yeah, it's like a minefield, really. You have a number of things on your plate, and you've ordered this and that because of the wine available. And if either the wine or the food runs out before the other, you are stuck with a wine that you don't know what it's going to go with, and you're just guessing, like, okay, I'll do the this or the that. And if that other thing happens where they say, Mr. Taylor, you've drank the last bottle of Barolo, is there something on the list you would like to have now? If that happens, now you're dealing with the pairing with the food or whatever. Because for me, the food is really the shoehorn to get great wine into you in the most elegant and wonderfully enjoyable way.
Well, one way or the other, I screwed something up and I feel dumb because I feel like I wasted this $39 bottle of wine. Although I will tell you, even after the fact, I still taste like a cake, like a sweet saccharine aftertaste. And now the salami is out of my system. The black truffle oil is out of my system. The cheese is out of my system.
It's still not great.
I hate to say it. I don't really like this one.
You know what I hate to say?
What?
Mine was 2019. Yours was 2020. It's a different year. Maybe look up the difference between those 2 years because mine was flawless, and I think my year lined up better with Robert Parker and all those guys than yours did.
That
But
could one year
although
make that much
you,
of a difference?
it's a whole different year. It's a whole
It
different
can make
weather
that big of a,
system.
okay. Damn it.
Yeah.
Well, all right, we're gonna call this episode is a mulligan because I don't like it. I'm giving it a 87. What do you give yours?
I wish we had had the same year. So, because this is the first time in five episodes that we have not had identically the same experience
Yeah.
with wine and food and everything. And the cornerstone of it all is having the same wine because it's a wine podcast.
You're making me really embarrassed, but so be it. Live and learn.
It needed to happen. You're going to be loud and proud from here on out, and obviously these details will never slip past your evil eye.
How to ruin a wine podcast in three steps. One, cork the bottle. Two,
No, that wasn't a
get the
problem at
wrong.
all. That
All right. I'm proud
one,
of
two,
myself.
and
Two.
three, four, and five are all get a different year.
Get the wrong wine, eat the wrong salami,
I would
and let the
love
phone
to
die.
try. I'm gonna go down and get a 2020, and we'll talk about it in the next episode, which I believe we're getting next time. We're getting an oddball, which is a New Zealand Syrah, but they've been making it there for over 100 years, 125 years. So it should be pretty legit Syrah, and I think it's also a 19 or a 20, so it's got a few years on it. It should
Okay.
be fine, but I will refer back to this episode undoubtedly when we get back together and do the New Zealand.
Well, like and subscribe if you didn't find this podcast worthless, but we tried. I tried. Courtney.
I can tell you the 2019 is pretty much without flaw.
All right, well, I'm just going to finish this one. Like and subscribe. Deep dive wine acoustics. Fewer errors next time. Thanks, Courtney.
Love you,
Bye.
dog.